Let's talk about this second headquarters that Amazon's planning to open and construct. Cities and towns, regions across the United States are vying to be that site.
This is important to their culture. It's important to the creativity. It's important to attracting the kind of workforce they want. To find that kind of urban core, you need one of the cities, one of the older cities in the Northeast or the Midwest.
They're announcing their candidates for HQ2.
Candidates? Okay.
Where are they?
Atlanta. Boston, Chicago, Dallas, Denver, Indy.
Welcome back to the IBJ podcast. Okay, Amazon HQ2 is the biggest economic development story in the nation since September, has been Amazon's search for a place to put its $5 billion secondary headquarters campus, also known as HQ2. And out of 238 applications, Indianapolis got a nod in January as one of the 20 finalists. And that's the subject of our big roundtable discussion today on the IBJ podcast. I'm joined by three IBJ reporters who I'll introduce in a second. But before we all get you up to speed on everything you need to know about HQ2, I'm going to pose the roundtable's first question just to get you thinking. Could Indianapolis have been a finalist for the project if the search was 5 years ago? So just think about it. I'm Mason King. With me in our studios in the unheated portion of IBJ's headquarters is Haley Colombo, who covers government and economic development. Hi, Haley.
Hello.
In the interest of full disclosure, what is the last thing you bought on Amazon?
I purchased so much clothing on Amazon. I literally don't even know what the last item was. I purchased belts. I purchased dresses. I purchased a mattress cover for my mattress storage. So pretty much just every item you could ever think of.
Okay, so you're a good customer.
I am a Prime member, yes.
I should also say that I am a Prime member. Anthony, you cover technology, but you're a well-known Luddite. What did you last purchase on Amazon?
Well, I'm the other end of the spectrum. I haven't the foggiest idea what I last purchased on Amazon, and I think that's what the beauty of Amazon is. You know, I don't think it's a traditional brand the way Nike or Coke is. I think a lot of people in my age range, I'm a little older than Haley, use Amazon really without knowing that they're using Amazon until the package arrives. I simply go, I Google something, whether it's a bicycle tire, a dog biscuit, whatever. And, you know, sometimes I use Amazon, not because it's Amazon, but because it's the cheapest, the easiest, and the most efficient system to use. And lo and behold, the Amazon box arrives at my doorstep and we all live happily ever after.
Scott Olson covers real estate. Scott, what do you got?
So I'm in the same age bracket as Anthony. I too don't use it a lot, but we do have a Prime membership. My wife and two girls take full advantage of it. But I am in the market for a new TV, an upgrade, and so I'm beginning to scout it out.
I will say the last thing I bought was John Hodgman's book, Vacation Land. Look it up. It's pretty good. Okay, so we have a lot of ground to cover. Let's get to it. One caveat. As we know, Amazon's search process has been ridiculously secretive, which is going to help us today because we can speculate. Haley, tell us very quickly, what is HQ2?
So HQ2 is the second headquarters for Amazon. They, you know, as most people know, they have their big, you know, headquarters in Seattle, and they're looking to expand and spread out. So they're going to be up to, they said, 50,000 people or workers at this next site. They're looking for a significant amount of space. They did an RFQ process to basically solicit ideas and sort of entries, I guess, for cities to apply to get the next headquarters. So, you know, 238, I believe, cities applied. You know, they narrowed down the finalists to 20, and this could be, you know, a huge economic development project, the likes of which this country has probably never seen.
Mason, if I might interject on that, I think there's a fair amount of intrigue in what HQ2 will be. I've talked to a number of people in the tech community. I've even talked to two people on the search committee that really can't tell me definitively what HQ2 will be.
Yeah. I mean, one of the numbers that we do know is they say that they could hire as many 50,000 people, full-time jobs, over the next 10 to 15 years. And the jobs will pay an average of $100,000 a year. One of the things that Amazon did early on in the process was say, here's what we want. They give some very specific criteria. Now, what do they want, Scott, from a real estate perspective?
They need at least 100 acres, enough acreage for a type of headquarters or whatever they're seeking. It needs to be in an urban environment. you know, close to interstates, close to an airport. So that's the main things that they're looking at. It so happens that there's one prime piece of property in Indianapolis that fits that bill.
Okay, and that is the former GM Stamping Plant.
It is.
That is west of Lucas Oil, across...
across from the zoo on...
Yeah, and across from the zoo.
South... Okay. Of East or West Washington Street.
And it's 103 acres.
Yep.
I recall. And it's right now, I mean, it's basically raised, right? I mean, it's vacant and there's a bunch of weeds growing there.
It is shovel ready.
There you go. And there already is a developer attached?
There is a local group, Ambrose Property Group, responded to an RFP. It had tried a couple of times to get it and lost out when it was going to be, you know, under Mayor Ballard, the Justice Center, and later a concert venue. And third time was a charm. And they're proposing a big office project there. Well, mixed use, I guess, say office, apartments, retail. Obviously, if Amazon were to work out, I'm sure they'd be okay with it.
Yeah, that was my question. If Amazon decides to come to town, would they have any trouble saying, we'll help you instead?
I would doubt it.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, and Haley, I forgot to ask you. When we talk about Indianapolis has a bid, Indianapolis is doing this, who really are we talking about? Who's driving this process?
So the process is primarily being driven by the Indy Partnership, which is sort of an offshoot of the Indy Chamber. People have sort of been interchangeably saying Indy Chamber or Indy Partnership that's driving this. And I guess the Indy Partnership, too, does cover like economic development in the whole. I think it's like a, you know, multi-county area, sort of a regional type thing. And that, you know, makes sense because obviously even if Indianapolis is the site of the second headquarters, if it's chosen, you know, the entire region is going to be involved in either Amazon employees living there or people from the region working there. So it's a whole sort of regional approach too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's been, you know, to that end, there's been cooperation between Mayor Joe Hogsett of Indianapolis and Mayor Scott Fadness of Fishers in terms of, you know, putting together the bid and just being sort of shepherds of the whole thing.
Yeah. Like, you know, the politicians are still linked into this process. It's not
yes.
Mike Huber in the chamber running off on their own and deciding what the bid is going to be.
Well, in some ways, they're pretty much in charge of it. They're the people running the point, putting the whole thing together. Obviously, they're communicating with the political stakeholders, but a lot of this, because it's an economic development project, is the private boosters of the city trying to make the case that, you know, everyone is on board.
Now, going back to the stamping plant, I think a lot of people think that stamping plant site is by far, maybe not by far, but is very much the strongest part of our package. It's really kind of perfect for what they want. And then also some of the advantages Indianapolis have are low cost of living, business-friendly taxes, politicians who are kind of used to working together on economic development and aren't going to throw up any big roadblocks. A lot less certain is how Amazon is going to recruit these thousands and thousands of employees that it says it needs. So, Anthony, what are they looking for in terms of talent?
Well, naturally, they are looking for all kinds of people in technology, which includes the engineers, coders, you know, all sorts of things that you could imagine with respect to what a technology company has. But I mean, I think one thing that people overlook is the number of what I might call rank and file type employees are going to need non-tech people. I mean, it's, as I alluded to earlier, it's a kind of a city unto itself. They're going to need a lot of pencil pushers and broom pushers and maintenance people. I don't know that the city has a full grasp on the scope of people that are going to be needed. I mean, like I said, it's easy to point to technology, but the people that they're going to need is going to be way, way, way beyond technology.
Isn't that what everybody is worried about? I mean, that's what they say publicly they're worried about, is that can we get enough tech people in to satisfy their need? I mean, some people argue that we don't have enough tech people.
Well, if
people,
you offer them $100,000 on average, they're going to be in a problem getting tech workers. It's the other tech companies that are going to have the problem. I mean, because our average tech wage right now is around $78,000 a year. So you put a pencil to that. If your average wage is $100,000 and you've got a considerable number of people who are non-tech people who are making $50,000 a year, your tech people are going to be pushing $150,000 a year. So Amazon's not going to have a problem. The rest of the region's going to have a problem. The Infosys of the world and all those other tech companies, they're going to have a problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing from sources too. That's the biggest factor, is what effect, you know, although they'll have on the region, just the other existing tech companies in terms of what the workforce might be in terms of taking employees.
That's interesting.
At the same time, it could help those places, you know, obviously. We're not, it's not just going to be, you know, 50,000 people from here. We're going to probably end up net recruiting in a lot of those people. We're going to have to, because obviously it'll open up jobs at the other tech companies, like you were saying. So it could sort of create a destination type situation where these kids are, you know, maybe coming out of college hoping to get a job at Amazon because they know it's here. Oh, well, Infosys offered me something pretty good. Maybe I could work there in a couple of years.
And to Haley's point, when Haley and I were at the Infosys announcement last month that Vice President Pence showed up at, I would say, holy, 3 out of 5 people that I talked to, Infosys employees, were not from Indianapolis.
Right.
They came from Kansas City. They came from Chicago. In their case, Infosys is from India, so some of them came over from India. But I do think lots and lots of people will come from outside the region, particularly given the wage scale we're talking about here with Amazon. If, and I do think there is some element of if, Amazon can come through on those promised wages.
Let me move real quick to transportation, because that's one of the things that is in the RFP. Amazon says it wants a diverse transit and transportation options for its commuting employees. And of course, unlike big cities like LA, Chicago, and New York, which are also finalists for this process, Indy doesn't have a robust mass transit system that essentially blankets the whole area. And Indigo, of course, the bus system is slowly expanding, and it's in the midst of some improvements. We have kind of a patchwork of electric car and bicycle rental services. That said, you know, commuting times in Indianapolis by car aren't that bad.
If you live on the south side, it's very good, Mason.
just from personal reference, I can be from Zionsville to downtown in less than 25 minutes. So
that's
we'll
solid.
See if that can hold up.
That's what I get from Broderpool. That's pretty good.
And if you've been to places like Denver or Portland, Oregon, Seattle, they're much, much worse. And some of their infrastructure, you know, while Denver has recently completed a commuter train, they don't have a loop like 465. And some of the infrastructure that I think we take for granted, I mean, if you'll travel around a little bit and look at some of the other cities' infrastructure, they don't have the kind of auto infrastructure we have. Now, a lot of people like to run that down. You know, Indy is an auto town and waste all these resources commuting back and forth with automobile. But that is a piece of infrastructure that I don't think should be underestimated.
The other thing, too, is, you know, they can build whatever they want to build. Like in some of these, or fund whatever they want to fund. You know, Amazon's a big enough company where they could fund their own sort of commuter bus that hooks into Indigo and fund whatever. And I'm pretty sure, like, this is also the kind of city where our public officials would work with them to create the situation that would be beneficial for them. Like businesses, you know, businesses have that sort of pull over government here in a way that other cities are like, well, our, you know, we have the system we have and it's sort of baked in. Not that our lack of public transit is probably a good thing for them, but I'm sure people are pitching it as, well, we could create the sort of system that works really well for you guys.
To Haley's point, that's kind of what I was thinking about. Amazon's request for travel, right? They want to have direct flights to San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, D.C., which we kind of have. I mean, not with any great frequency. But I think, our, you know, public officials have shown that they're pretty good at cutting deals with airlines to make it happen if you need that to happen. We didn't have a San Francisco flight until a couple of years ago, and then the state went and promised some money and made it happen.
Right. They've done that with the Paris thing too, or the Paris flight as well.
You mentioned the IEDC, which is Indiana Economic Development Corp, which we just write into incentives.
Yes.
Right? This doesn't just happen. The state and the city are going to, and have already, I'm sure, proposed very extravagant incentive packages. What can we safely say that the state at least has already offered?
I am sure they've put their incentive package out there or sort of given a range of, you know, what they would be willing to do. It could very easily add up. And I know that a lot of states/cities have, you know, they've encountered a lot of sort of public scrutiny about, you know, just sort of giving away the farm on these things. But yeah, I mean, we're definitely looking like probably upwards of $1 billion or $500 million. But there's also been some national discussion about the way that Amazon has done this. Is this essentially a race to the bottom where you're having, you know, a very wealthy company, you know, basically have everyone, like, you know, roll out these, you know, some struggling state and city governments roll out of these tax incentives.
Okay, so since the 20 finalists were announced in January, Amazon reportedly has already done all the site visits, or at least the initial site visits, including Indianapolis. Everybody apparently has been sworn to secrecy. It's been incredibly hard for us and everybody else to get details about this. Scott, what do we know, or what can we say at this point about what happened during the Indianapolis site visit?
So I think they came in under the cover of night and left the next morning. That's just a joke. Okay. No, we don't.
Are they having a Mayflower Trump?
Yeah, maybe. No, we don't know a lot, but we know they were here the week of March 19th, the same week that they visited Chicago. And surprisingly, they've managed to keep these visits pretty much under wraps. I mean, we know that they stayed at a downtown hotel, you know, just according to other reports. I think in the Wall Street Journal, you know, they talked about bike rides and such. And so we've got the cultural trail. So it might make sense that maybe they checked out some of our more up and coming trendy neighborhoods like Fountain Square, Mass Ave.
That's what occurred to me when I saw that report in the Wall Street Journal, that at least one city that they went around on bikes. And then the joke, of course, always is that, you know, there are so many potholes on the street at the time, they might as well travel on bikes.
And that was such a big issue at the time they were coming. So, right. Yeah, yep. I can only imagine, yep, like the jujitsu that went on to try to get them away from potholes.
Notably, I think they spent half the time in Indy they did in Chicago and Denver and Atlanta. I don't know what that says about our chances. Maybe our city is smaller and more navigable, but to my way of thinking, that's not a great sign.
I thought about that, too. The one thing about Chicago is apparently they had 10 sites. I don't know if they visited them all, but I mean, even though I'm sure that the local team suggested maybe 4 or 5 sites in Indianapolis, I think the only realistic site is the stamping plant.
For sure. I mean, in talking to real estate experts, you know, they threw the airport out there a little bit, but now with Infosys, you know, I mean, it's just the logical, I mean, it's right in downtown. I mean, it makes perfect sense.
So let's get to the first roundtable question. Could Indianapolis have been a finalist for this project 5 years ago?
I don't think so. I mean, simply, again, it goes back to the location. I mean, that was just kind of starting to gain steam, and there were other ideas about it. I mean, maybe there's some other properties out there that maybe could have risen to the top, but I think it would have been very hard.
I also think just from a cultural perspective, I mean, even like every time I even walk down the street and I work downtown, every time I even walk in my neighborhood, I live in Broad Ripple, like there's something fundamentally different and happening and being built. It is fundamentally different to live here and work here than it was 5 years ago.
Well, just think about all the apartments that have been built in the last 5 years, and, you know, the hotels, and it's, you know, changed the landscape of downtown.
So. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it's hard to quantify how many apartments are being built like downtown, yeah, but it's thousands and thousands, yep, with thousands more in the pipeline, yep, still.
I think, yep, we're underestimating Jeff Bezos. I mean, the guy is supposed to be a visionary, right? So surely he could have got his crystal ball out and seen all of this. But yeah, no, seriously, I mean, I think if you think about the last 5 years, you think about the improvements, not only to the airport infrastructure, but the flights we have in. Lucas Oil Stadium is built. The convention center has expanded. The number of new hotels that come online, restaurants, all of that stuff is hardware that certainly Amazon or a company like Amazon could put to good use.
Now, we can't control the other finalists, you know, 19 other finalists. Who are considered to be the leaders? And, you know, just to say for the record, if you look at the rankings that all the national publications do, Indianapolis is usually never near the top unless you're really talking about quality of life and cost of living. Where does everyone think it's going to go?
So for what it's worth, I've heard from what I consider a very good source. In fact, he's on the committee that is trying to lure Amazon, and he thinks, has good reason to believe that Denver, Atlanta, and Washington, D.C. are the three front runners, and Dallas, Nashville, and Indianapolis are the three dark horses. So that's out of 20. We're I suppose, in the top six politics, if you want to look at it that way. We all know that Jeff Bezos has property and projects in the Washington, D.C. area. We also know that Jeff Bezos is nothing if not oppositional defiant and will oftentimes go in the opposite direction that people believe he will go or want him to go. So maybe that bodes well for Indianapolis.
And cheap. Yeah. I mean, he's Mr. Budget.
Yeah. I also think when you think about the average salaries, if you want to like sort of think of it as like they're looking to attract like mostly sort of tech workers in that $100,000 range, you're not going to get really good tech workers for that in an expensive, high cost of living city. $100,000 is nothing in some of these cities. It would not be competitive.
All right, so let's make the case for Jeff Bezos. If you had to sell Indianapolis, what's the elevator pitch?
This is a little bit of a backhanded compliment, but I would say Indianapolis is a dog that's willing to be wagged. And Haley pointed out how eager the local politicians and leaders are to be business friendly, and that's very true. And again, for those of us who have been here for a very long time, it's easy to take that for granted. But there are a lot of cities and a lot of states who don't work together at all. When I covered sports business before Scott took it over, I heard that from many, many national sports organizations that they wouldn't have come here, including the National Football League, they wouldn't have come here if they didn't have such a great effort, combined effort, both from the city and the state. We saw that in Emphasis when a Democratic mayor and Joe Hogsett showed up and joined hands with a Republican vice president and a Republican governor. And that just doesn't happen. That just does not happen in other states and other cities. Forget about everything else, because infrastructure can be changed. Everything else can be changed, but entrenched politics takes years and decades and maybe never can be changed and won't be changed. So that's how I would sell Jeff Bezos.
Well, awesome. Well, thanks for joining me, guys. This is really great.
Thank you. Thanks for appreciate it.